Welcome to Teachers Teaching Teachers. It is the third show of a three-part series that Troy Hicks has been so nice to put together. It's allowed Susan and me to take a breath and start our semesters, but it's been really interesting shows so far. Focused on the digital writing workshop, a book that Troy wrote with Heinemann, and if you don't have it yet, please go order it. And but it's really just nice to have Troy. Troy has invited teachers who he features in the book. Tonight we have Melissa Pomerantz from St. Louis, Heather Lewis from Lansing, and hopefully Joe Bellino from Maryland will be joining us. I joked in my Twitter that that we were going to have teachers from 3M states tonight. So we've got Michigan, Missouri, and hopefully Maryland coming up soon. But anyway, welcome. And Troy, I'll just kind of leave it up to you to get us started here.
All right.
Let us know what our theme is tonight.
All right. Well, again, thank you for inviting me on the show, and I'm glad that Melissa and Heather could join us, and hopefully Joe can jump in later. I'll have them each introduce themselves a little bit more formally as we move through the show, but you know, having them here tonight and all the other teachers that have been featured over the past couple weeks has been kind of indicative of how I went about composing the book, and that was to feature the work of teachers who are using digital writing in their classrooms as we try to figure out what it means to teach in a digital writing workshop. And so tonight we're going to be talking about the process of conferring, or sometimes called conferencing, or just sitting down and talking with students about their writing. So we're going to be talking about conferring and response, in particular how teachers respond to students' writing in digital environments, as well as how students respond to one another. So that's the topic for tonight. And a couple quick notes. One thing I wanted to let you know about, again, is that we have the Ning Digital Writing Workshop, ning.com. We also have a Twitter feed, which escapes me off the top of my head, but I will post that in the show notes as well. So hopefully you will join in and follow us. And as an incentive to join in, since Paul's already promoted the book, I don't feel quite so shameless saying that to do another promotion of the book. The folks at Heinemann are being so kind as to be offering a discount code and free shipping through November. That is going to be posted to the Ning somehow here in the next week or so. I've been working with the marketing department at Heinemann, and they are going to have that special promotion where there'll be a discount on the book as well as free shipping. So if you want to get in on that, get in on the Ning, because I think it will be a members-only type of event, and I certainly hope that you're able to get that out there. And my goal would be, hopefully, as things get a little less busy, little, quote-unquote, little less busy after NCTE, will be to kind of do a book study throughout the school year, and we'll start looking at the chapters maybe on a month-to-month basis and have some discussions. I'm also doing some professional development throughout the school year that would add to that. So those are all the – oh, sorry.
Yeah, I was gonna interrupt just for just one second. I was curious when you said you that the show is indicative of the shows that you've been doing with inviting teachers – and let me ask a little naughty question. Were you disappointed? Did you think teachers were doing more than they are doing, or were you delighted, or like, what was your overall experience like in interviewing all those teachers?
I've actually been delighted. I was doing another project simultaneously that's in conjunction with the National Writing Projects Technology Initiative, and will be featured at the Digital Is pre-conference here in November before the NWP annual meeting. And that's a companion book to the Because Writing Matters text that came out a few years ago, and it's called Because Digital Writing Matters. And so while I was working on the Digital Writing Workshop, I was also doing interviews of teachers for Because Digital Writing Matters. And to be quite honest, I'm really thrilled with what's happening in classrooms. You know, there are people that are really trying to, you know, push their own boundaries personally with their technology learning and just, you know, trying new things out. And there are, you know, entire schools and districts that are moving in interesting directions. You know, that said, I think that, you know, you are well aware of the fact that not all classrooms and not all districts are doing this for a variety of reasons, some of it being a little bit of fear, some of it being a little bit of infrastructure, some of it just being lack of, pedagogy and understanding how to use the technology in these ways. So, there are places where it's on the way. And one of the things that, we hold dear to our hearts in National Writing Project, and that I think, like I said, is kind of indicative of what I did with the book and then also this series of webcasts, is to just invite teachers' voices and say, here's what we're doing in our classrooms to try to understand how these new technologies are influencing writing practices. And I think that the examples really go to the heart of what you tried to do on the show with the keeping it real. And you hear from teachers what's working, why it's working, the success stories, and then we also know that some things don't always work. So hopefully using the Ning, we can continue the conversation and have people say, well, I tried this and this didn't quite work like I thought it would, or I tried this and this is how it worked for me, but maybe we could do differently. Maybe we could get connected, all those types of things. So, I would say on the whole, I'm really pleased to see some of the things that are going on, but because I'm an optimist and I'm in the hope business as a teacher, but also as a realist, I wish there was more of it, but that's the work we do. So here we are having these conversations. That was a long answer to your short question. Oh,
that's cool. That's cool. So let's get Melissa and Heather in here and, or however you'd like to go for it.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to take 1 second here and kind of introduce.
Troy, we lost you for a second.
A quick section, open the chapter, and then I will invite Melissa and Heather to talk about what they do with their students in their classrooms.
Troy, could you start over there? We lost the beginning of that.
Oh, sure. I was going to say, I'm going to read from the beginning of the chapter about conferring and response, and then I'll open it up to Melissa and Heather to talk about what they do with their students to offer them feedback using different technology tools. So here's kind of how I frame my thinking on all this. I say, as useful as it is to teach students how to blog and keep track of online research, what we're really after is helping them compose more substantive texts, both individually and collaboratively. Such writing can occur through blogs, wikis, and collaborative word processing tools. While offering response online is different from the face-to-face interactions that many of us find the best part of teaching writing, these types of responses allow us more time to offer substantive feedback. Moreover, many students appreciate the way in which we build relationships with them through digital writing connections. So while it is different from our typical kinds of responses, conferring with digital writing tools can be just as powerful. And then here is a quote from Bud Hunt talking about this idea of making connections. There's something about the nature of the internet and how it functions that helps to flesh out a vital component of the writing process that was never quite visible before. Call it connective writing or hypertext or what you will, but the almost tactile connections we can make between texts and folks online are dynamic and significant. There's nothing new about making text-to-text connections, but there's sure something powerful in the representation of those links as semi-tangible things. So I want to just open with those ideas and think about how we're using the technology to have these conversations with our students. And I think Melissa and Heather offer two different ways to think about it. So I'm going to open it up to them. And I guess I'll start with Melissa, and maybe you could introduce yourself and tell a little bit about how you're using the audio feedback to support your student writers.
Okay, thanks, Troy. I'm Melissa Lynn Pomerantz, and I teach at a suburban high school in St. Louis, Missouri. And I have been playing with ways to figure out how to get audio feedback to my kids. Trying to have a one-on-one conference with every kid for every paper became a logistical nightmare because our class sizes aren't exactly what I would love. And even though they're great, I'm sure there are places that have much worse.
Melissa, you can't say that without saying what it is.
What my numbers are? The best case 20, worst case 28.
Okay.
So, five sections just can't happen, it's not like a private school with, 10 kids in a class that I could definitely get to everyone every day.
Yeah, New York and California would have you beat on some of those numbers, I think. But that's those
right. No, I know. I can't complain.
You can always complain. Don't worry.
So I was trying to recreate as best I could a conversation, even if it were not exactly a conversation, but I don't know how do you make it a solo conversation. And so I started using audio feedback by recording on my iPod and then making end comments or taking the kids through, particularly in my creative writing classes, taking them through their stories and, you know, just sort of thinking aloud as I was commenting back to them so that they knew what I was talking about and that it was a friendly, supportive voice as opposed to the one that was marking in the proverbial red pen, even though I don't do that. What I found was that the kids thought that I was much nicer on the audio than they did when I wrote comments, even if I said essentially the same thing, because the tone of my voice was different, I guess. And then when we switched over to PCs from Apple, what I didn't know was that Word had a audio embed. And so when I get digital copies of the kids' paper, sometimes I'll use the track changes and comment on it, and then I can insert an audio comment. So if it's something that's more complicated to talk about, if it's a big concept or even a grammar concept that you're trying to explain why, it's sometimes easier to do spoken than written. And the kids really like those little audio files. Is that what you wanted me
Troy,
to talk about?
Are you there, Troy?
I am here. Yep.
I don't know if I should jump in or not. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, no. So, go ahead.
Melissa, can you say that again and try to explain exactly when you choose to write something and when you choose to say something?
I guess. Sure.
Wait, let me just jump in here. Melissa, before you do that, there's a question in the chat room of what you were using to record comments on people's papers pre-PC.
Pre-PC, I had an iPod that I had a digital, like a microphone that I put on it. I like that fine. But now when I'm recording longer comments, like longer than a minute or two, I use just a digital voice recorder that I put in. It's the USB plug-in, and then I can just put my end comments in. We have a server system, and I can put it in my kids' folder on the server at school so they can just listen to the comments that way. Does that make sense?
It does.
Great, thank you.
So, choosing which way, whether you write it or say it?
Oh, right. if I think that it takes more explanation if it was going to take a really long time to explain it, the words take up so much space on the side of the page and my handwriting would get small or even the insert comment would get, you know, overwhelming, then I can just insert a comment there. If it's something that, you know, completely structural where I'm trying to tell them, you know, that this paragraph should really go here and explain why, that's easier to do conversationally than writing it out.
And let me just keep asking a little bit. What's your sense of what they pay attention to more? Or were you going to talk about that a little bit?
Here's the, you mean which written or oral?
Yeah.
Well, what the feedback that I've gotten, the kids say that they understand me better when I speak than when I write, which is sad. And I don't know if it's that. The intonation, or I'm just a bad writer. but what concerns me is, and I know that I can't ever tell if they read the comments either, but when I give them time to listen to the comments, you know, they all just take out their headphones and plug in. at, you know, at some point in time during the day, and it would take everybody 10 minutes to listen to it, and they take notes on what they said and make goals from it that way, then it's sort of a two-way conversation that way, that it's not just me lecturing, but that they get to say, okay, I understood this, I didn't understand that, this is what I'm going to do with this information. And so then they give that to me. And so it's sort of a conversation. It just seemed like it was a more manageable way to get them feedback and for them to respond to that feedback and do something with it.
I have lots more to ask, but Troy, do you want to jump back in here? Do you want to, you there? Hello? Did we lose Troy?
No, go for it.
Okay. I'll keep going?
Yep, you go ahead.
Okay. I don't know. So let me ask you a challenge, more or less challenging question here then, Melissa.
Okay.
Which is like, so why would you do this if, you know, why don't you just talk to your kids?
I agree.
I'm sure you do.
Ideally, that's the best way. I had a lovely conference with a kid this afternoon. But it was 20 minutes, and for, you know, the kids to stay after or before school, I can't get them all to come in, and I want them to all know that I care about their writing, and I want them to get better. And so I'm trying as best I can to get that one-on-one with everyone, and maybe it would make the kids who are more intimidated less intimidated to actually come in.
Yeah. So how long have you been doing this now?
About 4 years.
Wow. So you've been really messing with it. So so I was going to ask, like, this is a great idea and I want to try it. And other people in the chat room are liking it too. But is it like proof of concept? Like you've just proved this is cool? Or is it like you can get to everybody and it really is part of your practice now? Sounds like it is if it's been 4 years.
No, it's part of my practice. I don't do it on every paper. Like sometimes it becomes, I'll do it for one section, but all of my kids will get at least some audio comments during the course of a semester. So if I have three sections of something, sometimes I'll, on the first paper, one group, on the second paper, another group, on the third set, another group. Just depends on the time. Because it does take... the whole idea was to make it be faster to grade, but for me, it's not. That was my failure. Because I keep telling myself that I won't write and talk, but I do. So someone out there could probably do a much better job than I do.
Do you know anybody else doing it?
Some people in my department are playing with it. Now, I don't know if they still are. I mean, they definitely did when I showed it to them. And a lot of people bought the little, I think it's Panasonic that makes the one I have, little digital recorder to use. So I don't know if they are still using them this year or not, but everybody was sort of gung-ho last year.
Paul, I know a teacher in New York who... does a screencast. So he'll actually have the Word document up on the screen and click on it, move things around, and talk and record the screencast. But the question we've always had is the student can't respond back. And that's where it might be interesting to put that screencast or that picture or the voice in a voice thread so the student can continue the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. You were starting to think that too, weren't you, Melissa? I did blank out there a little bit, but you were saying something about it. Ideally, it'd be nice if they could talk back to you in a chat situation.
Yes. I mean, I do think that. I wonder if I would have time to go back and listen to their audio comments back. I just worry that wouldn't happen. But what I'm toying with now is doing that with their peer groups.
Uh-huh.
You mean their peer edit. They're peer edited. I put them in teams for the semester. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that then I could see the conversation somewhat and maybe, you know, chime in every once in a while as the process is going.
So I'm wondering,
go ahead.
Oh. I was wondering where telephones might fit here, as you mentioned, peer group. Like, if there are ways, I think, to add MP3 files using telephones to different texts. We'd have to explore that a little bit. But can you imagine a group of kids being able to telephone in their response to something they've read, to their peers reading? But anyway, I'm just bad.
Well, Paul, it's easy to call into a voice thread.
Yeah, right. That's one example. Yeah.
Right. And so, all right, I'm going to ask my question this time.
Good.
No, I was just curious to know, Melissa, like, over the course of the year, do you invite students to share their audio feedback with others? And I'm thinking, namely, like, parents. You know, one of the kind of, I don't know, to sum up a big critique of the writing workshop, there's this whole notion that, well, teachers don't really do anything. They're just trying to guide students. And they talk to students about their writing, and they don't really, you know, tell them anything or whatever. And this idea that you have this captured, you know, so there's this intended audience of your student, of course, who you want to have listen to this and get the feedback in the process. But then also, who are the other audiences you might have in mind for this? Or have you not gone in that direction yet? And if you have had an experience like that, has that turned out to be positive or negative? Or what's happened for you when those audio files go beyond the student's ears?
Well, I do think of that, like, well, is this going to be okay if a parent hears this? And, you know, I have to, you know, I mean, I would never say anything that wouldn't be, but, you know, it's the same when you're writing something. Some kids will show their parents and some kids won't. I mean, high school kids are, you know, some of them have, you know, pull away from their parents at, you know, certain times in their lives. But I've had really good feedback from the parents that have heard him. I've never required kids to share, you know, because it really is to them. And, you know, some of the things they're writing, they haven't shared with their parents. So I would feel odd sharing my feedback with the parents, besides, you know, just talking about the writing. But it also has, you know, content information in it.
Mm-hmm. Troy, you just made me chuckle. How do you get an audio comment signed by your parents?
Well, I don't know that you would. I thought it was interesting. You know, it's just one of those, one of those moments that I faced when I was in the writing workshop. Oh, actually, quick question. Someone's asked a few times what grade you teach, Melissa. Could you answer that real fast?
Sure. 10th, 11th, and 12th. I kind of keep writing it down.
Oh, there it goes in the chat room. Okay, thanks. Anyway, just that notion that, you know, we try to explain what we do when we're teaching writing, and there's this moment where here you are giving feedback to a student, you know, and obviously the point is to have this kind of one-to-one conversation about his or her writing, yet as an audio file, I mean, that student could, for good or bad, take it and use it, you know. And I'm just wondering if that sparked future conversations or whatnot. I'm also curious, too, just like in a kind of a teacher research sense, like if you've gone back and listened to some of your comments that you've given students over the course of the year and said, yeah, they really took my advice, or no, I've been telling you this, you know, this is the third time I've suggested this and you're just not – you're not getting it, or do you ever look back at what you've listened back to what you've said and then think about it from that perspective?
I listen to what I said, but the kids also have to write what they heard so I know that they heard what I said and so that I see that they have understood what I've said. So they sort of summarize and make goals for themselves in their reflections of their next assignment. This is what I heard you say I needed to work on. This is what I decided I was working on. This is how I did it. So I kind of keep track of it that way.
Okay. So, yeah.
And I don't want to leave Susan's idea Susan kept popping in with voice thread ideas. Melissa, do you know voice thread at all?
Uh-huh. Yes. No. I have.
So what? Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I've showed it to my kids to use with projects, but I haven't done a lot of with
I haven't either, but
class,
it seems like
with class stuff.
Yeah, so it
my
seems
kids
like
use it more than I do.
Right. It would seem very pretty easy for them to take a Word document and pop it up into a voice thread. And then there could be both peer conversation and your conversation right there. They wouldn't like need any other recorder or anything. And then it would be interesting to share those conversations around that document.
It'd
be worth playing with that.
That may be this year's project.
Lots of ideas here.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, I think maybe we could transition over to Heather now. We're still trying to find Joe and get him online here. I think we're getting through some technical difficulties, so hopefully he'll be here soon.
Susan, there was an email. Did you see it? It's Belino J.
Just I think we're...
You're good. Okay,
He's on Skype, so hopefully we'll get him in the call here in a second. But let's transfer over to Heather. And Heather uses Google Docs with her middle school students, and I'll let you do more of your own introduction.
Oh, great. Thanks, Troy. I'm Heather Lewis. I teach 8th grade English at Waverly Middle School in Lansing. We started trying to figure out how we could get boy writers more interested in writing. And so that's why about 2 years ago we started using Google Docs, thinking that the move to an electronic medium with a bit more bells and whistles would attract boy writers more. And then once we started using it, a lot of students enjoyed it. And so really, I guess the component then you wanted to talk about was the feature of having the students use Google Docs for their papers, sharing the document then with me, and then being able to have the conversation about their paper electronically by using the comment feature or the footnote feature then. And so I would, they draft, Heather? They put it up there. Yeah.
So I'm just suggesting you could slow down a little bit. I just wanted to ask about the theory of action there. Why Google Docs, and what was the idea that that would attract boys in 8th grade?
I guess as opposed to just straight, as opposed to pen and pencil, they find the electronic medium much more interesting because the boys who are gamers are very comfortable around the keyboard.
Cool.
And then opposed to just a Word document, as opposed to the Google Docs, having that ability to be able to type at home with the same paper, also at school, being able to insert links, being able to insert, all the video and all those different types of things. I guess with those type of abilities, we thought we would appeal more for the guys who are gamers and are quite comfortable in the electronic setting.
And 8th grade boys never lose their, disk drives or anything like that, do they?
Exactly. It's because the jump drives keep coming down in price, yeah.
Well, wasn't that part of your reason for switching to Google Docs, too? I mean, I know we were talking about that a lot when we were doing Project Write and just kind of the management system of it. Is your life easier now with Google Docs? I know that's a leading question, but I'm curious to hear, in what ways has it changed your life as a teacher who tries to respond to her students' writing?
Well, I feel like because I am comfortable on the computer, that I feel I'm much more verbose when I'm typing my comments to my students, where I might feel more limited, with paper and pen. I feel much more organized instead of papers flying everywhere. Having those all online and in a mode that I can easily organize all of my papers. And I guess I like it for its organization, but also because it just opens up so many more possibilities. I mean, I was and am a diehard portfolio person. And so since the beginning of my career, I've always had students write papers. I've always had them keep their papers. We've always done reflection within the three-ring binder. But to have the ability to move it to, an electronic medium, to have the possibility of sharing it now with the click of a button, publish as web page for my students, and then introduce all of the other Google apps along with Google Docs so that my students now can create their own Google site, you know, the possibilities just keep growing, and I think the more excited I am about it, of course, this displays on a lot of my students as well, and they get excited to do it also.
Cool. There's a great question here in the chat room. Does Google Docs help the boys self-edit or take more ownership of their work? What are your feelings on that?
You know, I think it does help with that with the boys. It encourages them to self-edit because we've made it, quote-unquote, easier. They definitely don't want to have to go back, you know, to the pen and paper and then rewrite it. They have no desire to even want to cross it out and write above it. But the deleting and retyping is no problem for them. The ownership part, you know, once I tell them that their work is going to be showcased on the internet, a lot of them perk up. And so once they realize that this is going to be out there with their name, I'm going to be, you know, they'll be sharing it with whoever, I think a lot of them either are very proud to have it on there, or just for the geeky part of it is having it up on the internet. I think a lot of them enjoy that. In fact, I had one student today who said, I don't even know what he said, but he said something about, well, can I rig it so that I come up first in the Google search? I said, yeah, you know how to do that, knock yourself out, that's fine. So, but the possibility, I think they really start to take off on it.
How do they go from the Google Doc to putting it up online? What is it?
Last year, for the first time, what we did is I had them each create their own Google site. Mm-hmm. And so this time it was a lot of copying and pasting onto pages, organizing their website so that they had a main page that introduced them as authors, and then created links to each page that would have a different piece of writing of which they thought was very representative of them, and then they explained it. This year, I'm not sure, though, because now that I'm feeling more comfortable with Google Docs and they have that feature, publish on the web, you know, immediately, and then all the changes they make on that document that are also appearing, you know, wherever they have placed that on the web, then I don't know if I want to incorporate something like that this year differently.
Is that a change? Is that something new that on Google Docs?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it's just something, you know, every year I find more teachers that I,
sure.
You know.
I know.
Every year there's something new, even though it's not new to everyone else, it's new to me.
I use Google Docs too, and I just wanted to ask a quick question on just a very practical question. What I've found is that I set up a, you know, we have Google Apps for education in our school, and I set up an email address for each of my classes. And so when they share, they don't share with me, they share with that class email. Just helps me manage more. Have you felt that necessary, or? Just because I like when it all gets and Google's Docs somehow eliminated the ability to search through names and so forth. I think. Did you notice all of that? Anyway.
No, I didn't.
Okay. I'm sort of geeking out here a little bit. But just back to that other question about, do you set up separate emails for each class, or how do you manage all the different classes coming in and finding stuff?
Yeah, that was my next question too.
I want to do a clarifying question, though, for you. So when you say that you set them up with one email as a class, so then you're saying that once they type a paper and they share it, everybody can see everyone's paper in that class?
No. Sorry. Instead of them sharing with me as the teacher, they all have their own Gmail accounts, right? Their own documents, their own docs. But instead of sharing with, you know, P. Allison, they share with English 10OB, right? So I create a class like that they share with, and then I log into that class, and that enables me to kind of keep things organized. Maybe I'm just needing to do that.
No, that's a great idea.
There's a brand new thing that came out now where you can create a folder and share the folder.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Oh, yeah.
You got to put things in that folder. So you do that too.
Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah. I think setting up a separate ID, yeah. Sorry, Heather.
Say right now I'm just doing it maybe the long and arduous way. Every hour when we go into the lab and I've got those students captive and they open a new document for me, immediately I'm telling them, okay, now be remember to click on your share tab and share with Mrs. Lewis and type in my email. And so when they do that, I'm logged on and I'm watching them pop up, you know, as they share with me. And by the end of the hour, because I teach eighth graders, I need to know that they've all done it correctly, because so many times they type my email address wrong, and of course it goes into limbo and they end up sharing with Heather Lulu or something weird, you know. And so I just take all of those files and slap them into a folder right then and there. And then, so that's how I manage them right now. The other, I think, part of your question was in regards to my students. Last year, each of them was set up with a Gmail account. I sent home permission slips and created them all. This year, I asked my district if they would become a Google Education school. And then when they found out how much was involved, were trying to convince me that I didn't want to do it. And so they told me that they recommend 6 weeks for the implementation, and that they didn't want to put all of our – see, and I'm not exactly quite sure how they were, because they were doing, you know, the other end of it. And so I honestly don't know. They just made it sound like it was going to be a lot harder than what I wanted, which was just get my kids an email so I can type in Google Docs, which is all I wanted. So this year they had me actually, like, go to something like mailcatch.com and create my kids the temporary emails to be able to sign them up for Google Apps. And so this year the students don't have Gmail.
So say that again, though. They use the other service to sign up for Google Apps, their own Google Apps.
Yes.
Their own Google. Okay.
Well, like, I gave, like, each of the students, I gave them their own Google account, but instead of using a Gmail account to do that, I gave them a mail catch account, like a disposable email, to do the sign up.
Okay. Cool.
And that made them happy anyways. It really made them nervous that I was giving them Gmail accounts where the students could receive spam, and then we could hear from the parents, of course, that, you know, my child's getting these.
Yeah, but horrible. Google Apps is a way to get around that, by the way. And you know what? And Troy, just maybe there needs to be a section on the Ning or something, but it would be great if Heather were able to say, my district says it takes 6 weeks, and we could answer, no, it takes about 3 hours, to set up.
Right.
So anyway, Heather, I don't mean to diss your district or anything, you know?
No, that's fine. That's no, it's frustrating sometimes. Because, and it's taken a long time to build up a relationship with tech, you know, just to even get them to do this much for me, so...
Yeah, so it sounds like you're very resourceful in getting it going, so that's great.
Well, and I think there's a lesson to be learned there, too, and that is that, you know, a lot of times there's part of that whole, you know, beg forgiveness rather than ask permission, which I don't know that I recommend in every school setting, but I think just this kind of, it was something that came up over and over again, this project that Heather and I were in, Project Write with Red Cedar Writing Project, and I think maybe Heather, you can talk to this too, but it seemed like people we'd introduce something at 1 month session, and then they will go back in school and be like, oh no, we can't really do it. And we got told, oh no, just here, try again, show this example. Oh no, can't really do it. And then like the third or fourth or fifth time, and one pair of teachers, seriously, it took them a year to get a wiki space unblocked in their district. But when they got it unblocked, it was just like, hallelujah, you know, the fireworks lit up the sky and they were able to do things with their kids. So I don't know, there's more to it. I just need to ask a quick technical question. Did we get Joe in the call here?
Yeah, Joe's
hey.
Yeah, Joe's here.
All
Joe's
right
in the house.
How are you doing?
Oh.
Cool. Well, I think good. I think if you want to finish up with a question for Heather, and then maybe we'll transition into Joe and he can talk how he uses Google Docs too.
Yeah, that's great. But I just felt like Heather didn't get a lot of chance to talk about the conferring part, like how you use Google Docs to give kids feedback or give each other feedback. And I was wondering if you use the insert comment feature on Docs.
Okay. You know, I do, and a lot of times, it's just basically, you know, whatever I would have done with paper and pencil, I'm now able mm-hmm. to do, you know, using the insert comment feature. Then the students are always encouraged to get them to read my comments with and do something with it. I offer that if they would read the comments and listen and try to rewrite on their documents, then, you know, I would then, you know, give them a different grade. So doing that, you know, a lot of students then want the better grade, and so that'll force them to read the comments. And then I tell them, just go ahead and click and delete them when you're done. Mm-hmm. And then I normally just go back
to the revision history. Which is easy to do, Docs.
Yeah, and then going back to the revision history just to refresh my memory of what comments I had made. And then going back to see what type of, you know, changes they had done. So
let me just check that again. In the revision, I wasn't sure that in the revision history, it keeps the comments even after they deleted it.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Good enough. I know we need to get Joe on here. You know, I have my students have three students give each other. Feedback using insert comments, and then they revised the piece, and then I made a comment after that on a girl's piece, and she said, well, that's just what you think. None of my other commenters thought that. And so it's like, okay. I undercut my authority pretty fast there. Which is interesting.
Well, that's a good connection to this whole idea of conferring in response, and like does actually dovetail into what I think happens in Joe's classroom, is this notion that teachers certainly give one kind of response to students, but their peers give them another, and that can be good or bad. And one of the things that, you know, in one of his videos, Ralph Fletcher said something like, sometimes we might expect a little too much of students in their response. They're not the teacher. They can give that real, authentic, peer kind of audience response. And we're the ones that have to go back and really help students think about craft and think about what they're doing to really support their writing and, you know, add those details and use dialogue and those types of things. And so we're the ones that go back and really help them move the piece forward in those kind of writing types of ways, but that honest, emotional, gut level feedback that they get from their peers is just as important for them to develop their voice and so forth. So I think that's a good point to bring up.
Yeah, but I would argue that it's not clear which kind of feedback moves the piece forward.
Well, okay, yeah, that's a whole other show, but I think the point being that peers offer one kind of
response, I agree with the difference.
Teachers offer another. So. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, all right. Well, is it okay? Can we transition over to Joe so he can get some thoughts in here? You're working with English language learners, and you've been using Google Docs in some really creative ways. So I'll let you introduce yourself and go from there. So here's Joe.
Welcome back, Joe.
I'm Joe Bellino, and hi, Paul. I started using Google Docs at Montgomery Blair High School many years ago when it was Writely. It was 2006 when I learned about it at Tech Matters and National Writing Project Summer Institute, and shared it with a teacher. I am a teacher of English language learners, and I shared it with one of my colleagues who was teaching high intermediate English class, you know, for English language learners, and showed her about it, showed her how it worked, and she and I worked together with her class trying to get kids connected and learning how to use it. And I left the school 2 years ago, but I know that my colleague who's still there is still using it. And in fact, the way we did it was we didn't have the students create their own documents in their own accounts. We created the documents for them and added the class to that document. And so the document actually belonged to us. And then we got the students connected. It was a little rough at first trying to get the emails typed correctly. And
why did you have to type emails correctly if you owned the document? You wanted them to
in order to share it.
Okay.
In order to share the document, we had to put everyone's email in.
So it became like a big wiki then, didn't it? Or, I mean, how many students were on each document?
Like, well, the most we could add was 50. We had two classes where we had students in one class able to read the writing of students in another class. And we also had students in the same class reading their classmates' writing. I should say that back in the 1980s, I did middle 80s. I did some teacher research of English language learners doing peer response in the traditional way, and based on that research, the students told me one, they didn't like their classmates who didn't know much more English than they did correcting their English. They said that it was too difficult to understand when if their classmates read their papers, and they also had a hard time reading their writing, so if they read their papers. So generally they complained bitterly, well, not bitterly, they didn't like doing peer response other than getting time to talk with their friends. Yet,
you know, and if you feel that way about the peer response you're getting, it makes you wonder why you're giving it too, right?
Well, you know, I was learning about peer response. This is when I was learning about the process approach and seeing what teachers were doing and trying to figure out, will this work with my students? In spite of their complaints, their papers improved. And in the research project, we interviewed them and said, well, you didn't like it, but why is your final version a lot better than your first version? And the students, one in particular, but all of them alluded to this, well, I read what the other people wrote, and I liked what they wrote. Or I learned that I can't just write one paragraph. It looks better if I write more than, you know, break it down into smaller paragraphs. Or I saw how easy it is to find my periods. So that by reading other students' writing, they were improving their own writing. So what we found, and we found very similar things with Google Docs, that we set it up so that the students did their first draft in Word. And then when they were ready, I don't know if the teacher always looked at it or if they didn't really show it to their classmates, but the teacher would help them a little bit trying to get their first draft so that they were proud of it. Then they would share it with their classmates. Still very rough, but not, you know, it was at least legible, it could be understood. Then the classmates were told to go to four other classmates and read their papers and to respond to them. And they were given information, you know, general, the kinds of things that would be appropriate to say to a classmate. The purpose mainly was to get them reading other kids' writing and to see what they could learn from it. Mm-hmm. But we wanted them to think that they're also having input. And we found very similar reaction in terms of papers improved. And one student, a couple of students that we interviewed at the end of the first year, because we did a similar research with Google Docs, talked about how they liked reading the papers of other students. They got ideas from other students. They got confidence in their own writing because they could see how things that the teacher was saying other students understood better. So that whereas peer response in the traditional way was a noisy room with kids talking to each other, sometimes not really doing what they're supposed to do, some maybe talking about something else.
And I got to say, I have been a teacher and maybe other people here who get kind of very concerned about the kind of response they're giving to each other, like you got a point now and you got to do this now, that kind of thing.
So,
yeah, go ahead.
But what we, the teacher, you know, what you were just saying before about learning how to respond, the students didn't really know, they weren't good at it. They didn't know how to give good feedback. A lot of their feedback was they would say what someone told them, they would say it to someone else. Mm-hmm. But when the teacher started modeling what what good feedback looked like, a lot of students started to do what the teacher was doing. So there, while that wasn't our primary purpose, the primary purpose was really to have a way to motivate the students to post their writing for an audience other than the teacher, to think about other people reading it, to try and improve it based on what they read as well as what people might tell them. There were a couple of students whose advice they would pay attention to because they could look at the writing of some students and say, well, this is a good paper, so if this student tells me something, you know, maybe that's more important than another student whose paper maybe is filled with as many errors as my paper has or more. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, the funny thing now is that because the documents were ours, they still appear in my Google Docs, and kids who graduated 2 years ago are still using Google Docs. And one of them started writing in Amharic the other day because I can go into my Google Docs and I can keep track of what they're doing and look at all the revisions. They can go back a couple of years and see all of the papers that they've written.
Yeah, the archival nature of this is wonderful. Yeah. Good.
Well, and I think Joe's example speaks too to just this nature of community, and we talked about that a few weeks ago with the kind of work that you're doing in Youth Voices, and I think this is so critical to the digital writing. And you know, Heather's talking now about how she's having her students move their portfolios to blogs, and I think it just keeps going back to this notion that if we have students use technology to share their writing, does it really matter if there's not an audience there? You know, if the tree falls in the woods, the idea that we as teachers need to be consciously building community and teaching people how to respond to one another, both to be kind, but also to offer substantive feedback. And then I think what Joe just said about, you know, the students who began to trust certain voices more than others and helping them understand when and how they might get different feedback from people. These are all, you know, very deeply seated pedagogical issues. You can't just suddenly use Google Docs and expect kids to be better writers. We have to think very carefully about that. And that's what I think all of these examples tonight and really all the examples from the last 3 weeks show, that we've got to be really thinking about how the technology can support student writers, but what kind of teaching needs to go with it. So I know we're getting close, Paul, to the end. Do you have any other questions for Joe, or do we want to kind of turn to the final question of what's the one digital writing tool or tip that people would have?
We could do that, but also I'd love to hear what Melissa and Heather and Joe have to say to each other a little bit if they want to. If anybody have thoughts about what you heard tonight. Go ahead.
Well, I know, Melissa, I didn't know about the idea of being able to leave voice comments in a Word document, so I'm kind of excited to play around with that. And I know I've been wanting to introduce the phonecast.com, you know, since we don't have voice recorders. We don't even have a set of voice recorders at our middle school. So you've really opened up a lot of doors, and so now my mind's churning, so thank you for that.
Cool. I was thinking a lot along the lines of, we just did our first round of peer reviews in the editing teams that they're going to have for the semester, and you know, all that pre-work of teaching them how to give good comments, we're not there yet. And I always forget at the beginning of the year how much I have to teach them. you know, I really like what Joel was saying about that.
Yeah, Melissa, you know, one of the things, this is a theme for me right now in my own teaching, but so maybe, anyway. One of the things about that, though, is you want kids in there messing around, and like Joe was kind of pointing out, it's seeing each other's work that's as important as their actual kinds of feedback they give. So I wonder if I sometimes spend too much time introducing the tool. In this case, it would be like introducing all the ways of giving feedback. But I don't know. Just worth thinking about.
One thing I want to – I think I said it. Maybe I didn't say it, but I know I was thinking it. Google Docs made it really easy for kids to write their own papers and to read what other people were doing. When they would go into the lab, they were really focused on that task. They were on task, you know, 90% of the time. And that really helped them learn because they, you know, and often kids would be off, you know, talking or doing something else. And doing that continuously over the course of a year or 2 years, because some, you know, we would have some kids for 2 years, really helped us see tremendous improvement in the students' writing. And to go back over through the history and look at how it's developed, it was really powerful for us because, you know, we could see kids who struggled tremendously at the beginning writing confidently, still with errors, but, you know, their writing is developed and developing and will continue developing.
Joe, I so appreciate the kind of research and thoughtfulness that you put behind all your work.
Thank you.
Right. I certainly do, too. And every time I hear you talk about that, just that whole notion that kids are learning from each other and learning who's going to respond and give generative feedback, and it's just amazing. And I'm glad that Paul and I were able to be at that Tech Matters and watch your process over the last few years with that. So that's cool. All right. Well, I think what we're going to do is move to our final question for the evening for our three guests. And basically it's this. If you had one digital writing tool or a particular practice that you want to encourage other teachers to use in their classrooms, what would it be and why would you choose that? So either, I mean, you could talk about the tool and the practice together, I suppose, as well.
Gotta call on people.
Okay, I'm gonna pick on Heather. I'm gonna pick on Heather first because I can always get her to talk.
Oh, you're so funny.
Not really, but thank you for being
generous. I mean, there's so much to choose. Can I pick Google Docs? Is that
sure?
Okay,
yeah.
Google Docs has just transformed my teaching. And, you know, when Joe was talking about having the students make such strides in their writing, I mean, it's Google Docs. I think for eighth graders, you know, they're not the same as high schoolers in that high schoolers get it. A lot of them do their work or they start weeding out who's going to go to, you know, a different type of school, like a tech school or whatnot. Where eighth grade, we get all the kids, all the disabilities, all the excellers. How do you meet the demands in this differentiated classroom I'm supposed to have?
All the new hormones, too.
Yeah, yes, definitely. And so to have this tool, it's really encouraging all of my students to complete their work, which is a big deal in middle school. We've got kids who don't do work, and they don't care, and they have no intention of doing it, no matter whether their parents hang a carrot out in front of them. And so when you have something that's getting about 99% turn-in rate, it's been great.
And Heather, could I just add in? I'm excited. We had a show back in the summertime with some Google Docs people describing how to use templates and that we can create our own templates now. And that's a piece of work in Google Docs that I'm still exploring. And Susan mentioned earlier that there's this new ability to make public well, I don't know if you mentioned this, Susan, but to make public any document, you can do that really fast, or any folder. So that they keep developing it, I think, is an interesting thing, too.
Yes. So, yes.
Yeah. You want to read? Joe.
Can I talk?
Yes, please.
I have a hard time picking a tool because I don't think in terms of tools. I think in terms of what I want students to be able to do. And there are lots of, you know, depending on the task, some things are better than other things. I mean, Google Docs is really powerful. And maybe if I were to pick one, I would pick that just because of how it does so much. You know, it helps with the writing. It helps, you know, in terms of just because word processing itself, you don't know how much that saved my students. You know, looking back at my videotapes of the kids doing conferences, 90% of what they talked about was spelling of words. And once that word processing came along, they didn't have to do that anymore because the computer was helping them. Google Docs continues that, but it adds the whole idea of making it easy to share. So I think in terms of writing, I would have to say Google Docs. But NiceNet does something similar, although it's easier, it's harder to collaborate with NiceNet. But NiceNet, anything that gets kids to see that writing is not just for the teacher. It's not just a homework assignment. It's that you have something to tell people, and can you say it clearly and motivate them to want to read what you're writing? Anything that you can use to do that, you know, is great. You know, just doing a newspaper and having a purpose for writing kind of makes all of these other things that they don't like, you know, secondary, because they know that this is something that's important.
Joe, you just reminded me that sometime we're going to do a show about school newspapers, and when we do that, we'll bring you back to talk about all the experience you've had with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Good stuff. Troy, could I add one?
Sure.
I know we're over time, but...
It's your show. I'm throwing the link. There's a conversation about Google Docs templates, so I'm throwing that link in the chat room right now.
And if you go back a few shows, we did talk about that too. I wanted to kind of bounce off Joe's notion of the difficulty of picking tool, but in this way, what I found in the last 2 year or so is because my students are publishing really fast before I can even look at it sometimes on Youth Voices. And then I am going up on Youth Voices and thinking, oh my, this is a little embarrassing, or oh my, do I really want to put this here? And I can't conference with every kid. I would be such a bottleneck if I did that, because I don't want to be a bottleneck, and they're getting all sorts of feedback from lots of different people. But I'm moving into a role of response that is the response of an editor on a magazine kind of thing. And it's not the only kind of response I give. There's lots and lots of different kinds of response along the way in the process. But I think by publishing fast online, and by what gets published online not being finished yet, it's there to continue working with. And the teacher being the editor is an interesting kind of new role that I think digital writing allows us. So I don't know if that made any sense, but it's something that I'm really thinking about a lot and can look at some examples. And what's wonderful is that you can look at the original post, and then you can look at the post that the teacher kind of corrected, and then talk about, you know, those corrections. And don't you notice that I always take out that, well, if I think, you know, that you begin every sentence with. So anyway, that's really fast, but I wanted to throw that in there. And Troy, slow us down and finish this off here.
All right. Well, I know Melissa had to step out for a second. Are you back?
I'm back.
All right. So the question was, if you had to recommend one digital writing tool and or practice, what would you recommend? And you can certainly recommend adding audio comments to your students' essays if you would like to
I would say that. And I think anything where there can be interaction. I don't think the tool itself is so important. The platform. I mean, if you have Microsoft Word, use that. If you have Google Docs, use that. If you have, if you
VoiceThread,
use NiceNet, VoiceThread, whatever it is. And Troy and I were talking in the chat room about using Ning for. I created a class Ning, but I haven't started using that as a way for kids to comment on each other's work yet. But toying with that.
Great. Well, thank you. We have one last question here, Paul. Maybe you know this, and Sarah's saying that you can, but can you get an RSS feed for private changes in a Google Doc, or is it only after it goes public?
I think it has to be public.
Has to be public. Okay.
I think so. Cool. Yeah.
All right. Well, I will close by just saying that I've been very fortunate to have good fortune, sorry to sound repetitive here, but just I've really enjoyed the process of working on this book and the other book that's coming out with the National Writing Project, and the fact that we were able to represent so many teachers' voices through the book and also through these shows these past 3 weeks. And again, I would invite everybody to join the Ning, mainly because it's a great space and people are posting some good stuff there, and I really want to keep the conversations going in the form of a book study, but also because if you act now, you can get a discount and free shipping. Does that sound horribly?
It sounds okay.
Okay, so that was my
because we know it's all about
the book. Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, if you get on the Ning, hopefully you can get the code for Heinemann and then grab the book. And I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation there, and hopefully here again someday too. So. I'll stop being long-winded and let you close the show.
So, Troy, if you get enough books sold, you won't have to take that assistant football coach job, right?
Something like that, yeah.
You come from Michigan, so I thought I'd do a football joke.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. That's one of those funny things. I think books are always labors of love, and,
Yeah, it's about getting the message out. Come on. Yeah.
It is, and I felt very
building
fortunate.
Community, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and there's this whole notion now, too, of, you make some things available for free. And I think having these conversations on Teachers Teaching Teachers and using the Ning and using other things like that to continue the conversation. I mean, the ideas get out there and, hopefully we sell a few books, but do it for the purposes that it helps people improve their teaching. So that's why I always hate feeling like a salesman, but you got to advertise every now and again. Sarah reminds me of that.
Okay. So we are going to close off. Thank you so much, Joe, Melissa, and Heather, and of course, Troy, for pulling this all together. We are here every Wednesday, so please come back and join us. You have been listening to Teachers Teaching Teachers over the EdTech Talk channel of the World Bridges Network. Thank you, Susan Entenheim, for all of the work there in the background that you've been doing and broadcasting here for us. And thanks, Dave Cormier and Jeff Lebo, for the contributions of all their time and energy and server space and all of that other stuff that they do here for the community. Susan, do you have any final thoughts before you run off here?
I want more of this. I don't think it should stop, Troy. I think we need to come back. Not necessarily in a row, but we need to keep doing this.
Okay. Well, there might be another opportunity for conversation as we get closer to NCTE and people. A lot of the people that have been on the show the past few weeks have sessions coming up at NWP and NCTE. So maybe we can do a pre-conference panel discussion. That'd be fun.
And as Peggy's saying in the chat room, EdTech Talk has shows almost every night of the week.
Oh,
that's a big part of what I listen to, just show after show. So,
Peggy, thank you for mentioning that. Yeah. Come back to EdTech Talk a lot and check it out. So thank you all, and I think we're done. Good night.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.